Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date, and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark in Meat Space. We are together.
We are.
Like best friends should be.
I love being together.
And we have a great deal to talk about today.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a tiny bit about news.
Mm-hmm.
A tiny bit about media drama.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit about the problem of liberal masochism and whatnot that I wrote so eloquently about this week.
Yeah, sure. I read the whole thing. I read it twice.
We're gonna talk about parades, possibly watches.
No.
And feelings, because I am having an incredibly emo day.
Yeah. For people who don't realize this, one of the reasons we have all been together and we're putting our hands on each other and we've been in the studio is it is the Bulwark all staff, so everybody has flown in to be together. JVL's just been just an emotional, just a ball of feelings. I've gotten
walking
so many
around,
hugs.
There's
so many
people.
Yeah.
Crying a little bit.
You have been crying a little bit.
I mean, it's – anyway, we'll get to it. So we woke up this morning, I think, or maybe we went to bed yesterday with the news that – Donald Trump's name is now on the Institute of Peace.
Yes.
This is a thing that just happened.
Sure.
Like it just – people were walking past the building like, wait a minute. Did I always say Donald J. Trump up there?
Yeah.
Not clear to me that this was an act of Congress that was a thing. But it's there. Like there are gold letters now on the building. It is the Donald J. Trump Institute of Peace.
Sure.
The ballroom is going to be the Donald J. Trump ballroom.
Yeah.
I assume the White House eventually – will be the Donald J. Trump White
yeah.
House. He wants the stadium for the football team to have his name on it. What is to stop him from simply putting his name on every federal building in the country?
Nothing. He's going to do it, and we should tear them all off. Now, the actual, you know, do we campaign on tearing down the ballroom? Let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
But his name, I mean – you take his name off the second he's no longer president.
I mean, I don't want to get too – I don't want to make too much of this. But this does feel like North Korea.
Yeah.
Right? Like with the the portraits. Remember the portraits that he had hanging, you know, with his face glaring down from
mm-hmm.
public buildings
yeah.
and stuff. It's not normal. It's not American, the fact that we now live in a – country where not only do we have the maximum leader's visage staring down at us and his name being plastered across everything,
yeah.
But the Supreme Court now says that certain classes of people do have to carry their papers.
Sure.
And we had yet another story of an ICE encounter where a U.S. citizen was assaulted because she refused to show her papers.
Good for
and
you.
That was their license to, well, if she's not going to show her papers, we're going to take her down because she's brown.
Yeah.
I mean, shouldn't – I don't know. Like this is a thing we could say every single week.
Yeah.
Shouldn't people be more alarmed?
They should. I mean the cosmetic – Here's what I always try to do. I try to understand the difference between the cosmetic challenges and the deeply devastating illiberal challenges. Yeah. Now, they are not entirely separate.
Right. Venn diagram has a lot of
overlap. That's right. There's like a and the Institute of Peace one, it's just so transparently obvious. It's like, oh, are you in the middle of a major scandal in which you are alleged to have committed serious war crimes? Well, what do we do?
I hadn't even put those together, actually.
Of course that's what he's doing. Yeah. He's saying, oh, no. Put my name on the Institute of Peace because I'm going to try to mask the real damage that I'm doing. Like, the war crime is the real illiberal act. The putting the name on the building is the cosmetic cover-up.
That's the Orwell part.
Right. That's the cosmetic cover-up of the real illiberalism. And so I try not to get exercised about the specifics of the cosmetic part in order to instead focus on – and then you can do both. You can explain to people, as I think we just did, how they're connected. But I just want to – like, the act of him putting his name on things is like – that is his vanity. And it's also like something you sort of can't stop while he's president. Nobody's done this before. But unless somebody pushes back, meaning his own political party, the public in an enormous way, and it's fine to do those things symbolically. But like the thing that we need to focus on and I think where you do have actual members of Congress looking into them and looking for oversight, and you have people speaking out about them, and there's probably going to be hearings, is the very non-peaceful, illiberal, probably criminal, certainly immoral thing that he's doing. And so I guess that's how I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, we should just prepare ourselves that we're going to live in a world where 5 minutes after he goes to be with his Lord, half of the high schools in red state America will be named Donald J. Trump Memorial High School. Like, out in red state world, every airport, every municipal building, every high school sports stadium, like, it's going to be inescapable.
So maybe. Here's where my particular brand of optimism continues to live and breathe, which is Donald Trump is doing an actual horrible job at being president of the United States. He is failing across every vector.
True.
And so my greatest hope, the reason that we do this thing that we do, the reason we try to grow, the reason we want at the end of all this for Donald Trump to be so deeply unpopular, to be such a self-evident failure that people don't want to put his names on things. Like when he can't do it. And I understand that that there are going to be people who want to go down with that particular ship. But we don't know where this ends.
Let me explain to you my case for why this will happen.
Yes.
Okay. If you are a Republican in a like R plus 40 district in Texas, Donald Trump has just passed away. The surest way to get popular is to trigger your local libs. And the easiest way to trigger your local libs is to start naming shit after him.
Yeah.
Which will get all of your local opponents and local Democrats to yell and scream, at which point you can stand up and say, oh, look at that, I'm owning those lips. Like, that's what – you know what I mean? Like, it's the local politics of this that will allow them to – you know, it's like the easiest way to troll your local liberals will be to name shit after Trump.
I think that's right. I think you're right about that. I also think, though, that there's immediate history, right, where Donald Trump will be triggering – and then there's the history that goes on, like, that's 20 years from now. And I think that when I think sometimes about, like, what is our goal or what do I want for the country? I want for in 15 to 20 years Trump's memory of what he did to be so distasteful that no one will cop to having been for it. And there are people like that throughout history where, you know, they're people who were still with them in the immediate aftermath because their name carried with them. But then their names became mud.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's any – and I know people will say that there isn't, but if there is anything good and decent left in the country, there, I think, over time – my hope is that people will look back on this as a failure and as a time when America lost its mind, and that we can get back to a better place.
I mean, people who are younger than us may not realize that. So Nixon was driven out by the Republican Party. It was Republican senators who came to him and said, you got to step down because otherwise you're going to be convicted. But within like conservative world at the time, they were all behind Nixon.
Well, they were – there was
even
like,
after he left.
It was about 50-50 because I've written about this before, and it's true. Like there was a – you got to remember that there was still decent support among Republicans for Nixon. But mm-hmm. like you gave it 20 years and nobody wanted
that's exactly
Nixon
right.
on anything. Yep. And so I could see that being the case.
Maybe that's where we go.
Maybe. I try to take the optimistic view on that.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Nutsi interview.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit yesterday on TNL about it.
Yeah, we kind of didn't get into it too much. It's better to do it behind Tim's back. You thought it was a like spectacular interview, was your take?
So yeah, like I'm in a weird position on this because I was deeply skeptical that we should do it. I am the guy who is really conscious about platforming.
Yeah.
And like I don't love it when we have Ross Douthat on the show because I'm just like – to me that is like having Scott – Jennings, right? Like he's just gonna.
Not me. I think there's gradations.
Well, no. What I mean is, like, you just—it's a person who you know won't be straight. And so for those two reasons, I was like, I don't know, like you know. But there's news value in it. It's like I'm open to it. It's a one-time thing. You're not making this person a contributor, right?
Yeah.
I thought the execution of the interview was exceptional. It was something that only Tim could have done. Like I know I couldn't have done that. And I thought the result of it was what I was most concerned about because I have a very dim view of Olivia Nutsi qua journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Tim focused his interview on Kennedy and her responsibility for Kennedy becoming where he is now and his ability to impact the world. My more parochial view was like I'm part of the Journalism Guild and someone like this is hurting us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the net effect of this, of his conversation with her, was to illustrate that her rehabilitation is a failure.
Yeah.
That she is not actually okay. Like, I mean, because the fact that Vanity Fair hired her and the New York Times did like 4,000 words in which there was barely a cry. I mean, it was just a glow up.
Yeah.
In which everything she said was accepted, and they did these glamour shots. And
yeah,
it was
gross.
Like they were trying to turn her into Joan Didion.
Yeah.
And I think the net effect is that she comes out of that interview much more badly damaged, much more exposed. I think she's now unemployable.
Yeah.
In journalism. You know, she could be a screenwriter, right? She could go work for Netflix. There are plenty of things she could do. I just think she can't be a journalist. And she's a good writer. And so I thought for all those reasons, Tim was able to do that in a way that was civil and compassionate, right? Like, you know, I would have been foaming at the mouth. Like, why didn't you? You know, like, it would have been horrible. It would have been absolutely horrible. It would have been unwatchable. It would have been horrible. And Tim was just human and empathetic, but also very, very real and focused on the important parts. And he pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And I just don't think any reasonable person could come away from that interview thinking, yeah, she really helped herself.
Yeah.
Like
I can't imagine she does other interviews after that. Because why would anybody –
I don't think she'll do another one.
Yeah.
Right.
And not because –
she shouldn't have done this or any of the others.
Right, she's clearly not, she's in, a not in a place to own. Right, this is the thing about a redemption tour. Right, is sort of it begins with because I was thinking about this in the context of one of the reasons. So I'll say this. I want to say this about two things about Tim really quickly. So one, Tim, there's a reason that somebody like Tim gets an interview like that from somebody who's kind of at the center of this. Right, is that they. It's not that they think they're going to find like a sympathetic person. It's that they know that Tim will talk to them like a human.
Yeah.
Right? He will like be a human being in a conversational way that I think for people who Well, I just think it works for everybody, honestly. Like, there's a reason Tim's like an exceptional interviewer, and it's because he sort of meets people with a lot of humanity. But, you know, I think for in this moment where you think about people who did a great deal of damage or in the process of damaging democracy, I was thinking about like, well, you know, one of the things that is a characteristic of sort of the never Trump set is that we looked up the second that Trump happened and all went, wait a minute, what is happening here? What is going on? And trying to figure out, this isn't what we thought the Republican Party was. And then you're like, well, did we enable this? And there's this soul searching. And like Tim wrote a whole book about this where he kind of he took a lot of – and so he held himself accountable for what he felt like his role is. And I think part of the process for us early on – sometimes people who come new to the Bulwark are like – I don't hear them apologize for whatever.
I'm sorry, like, you're 6 years in.
Like, yeah, we are. But like, all of us spent years and still,
I have some
like,
pamphlets for you.
Why did I start doing the focus groups? It was like, wait a minute. Is this what's happening with the Republican Party? Is this? And like, I talk about this all the time how I spent too much time in sort of an academic think tank world of conservatism that did not have to grapple with sort of the sewer underneath. And what I saw, like my experience was, yeah, like we all knew there was this like kind of in both parties, you would say, well, there's these strains and it that's filled with sort of like crazier people. But it was always like John McCain and Jeb or, you know, George W. Bush, and which of course we can say like, oh, the, you know, you can hate them too.
Yeah, and HW,
but this
and
is
Dole
not,
and all this,
but this is not, you know, Donald Trump. And so I think that like, Our decision was to both figure out what was wrong, and then part of the like, it wasn't even like accountability. It was like, no, we're going to go fight back, right? And so my objection to her is like, okay, you made major mistakes here, mistakes that go beyond. And like again, it's like not so much the tawdry stuff. And part of why I sort of hate the whole conversation around with Nuzzi and everybody is like, it's all very gross, right? There's like a lot of gross rubbernecking and things like that. The thing that I feel about it is, what did you do to enable Donald Trump's second term? In part because I know that RFK helping Donald Trump get elected was a real piece of how Donald Trump did get elected. And there wasn't – like she is not at the point, and maybe she'll never get there because maybe that's not who she is, where she says, you know what? I made this mistake and here's how I'm going to rectify it. I'm going to rectify it by saying, no, this guy's doing real damage and like here's what I know. That's just like not where she is. And Tim was trying to get that
– over and over, giving her the opportunity.
But here's the other thing about Tim that I'll say. Like Tim – also went through like a big public pile-on in those early days. And I think he carries with him a level of compassion for anybody who is like when they're at their lowest moments. Like he's not going to kick somebody, right? Like he is going to – he was doing
he's a good boy.
The correct thing journalistically. But I know like the hunger that I felt not for her to suffer – but for her to sort of make the turn of what I did was wrong and here is how I'm going to fix it, I think just seeing that that's not there, like you don't get to have redemption then. And I think Tim really exposed that.
It was a bad interview for her.
Yeah. And so I just – but I'm like you where like I give him – credit for an ability to do something that like you and I both couldn't do that because we wouldn't be capable of.
Can you imagine me?
Can you imagine me? I mean like I just I can't access the compassion that he can access because my like this is what's funny is sometimes you guys are like, no, no, Sarah's the nice one. No. My rage is like JBL's.
Yeah. Not nice exactly. You're the good one. Tim is compassionate. Like Tim is genuinely, like at a molecular soul level, a compassionate human being. Like, his ability to meet people where they are. I mean, small children, old people, right-wing grifters, sweet hippies in Venice. Like, it's amazing. Like, you know, that blue shirt he has with the little patch that looks like the TV. Mm-hmm. Remember the old TV pattern thing on it? It's like just some woman on Venice Beach, I think, met him and was like, I think you should have this. And he was like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Like in a genuine way. He's an exceptional human being.
Yeah.
I love that, Tim.
So for people who wanted to see sort of the bloodletting, I think it's fair. I kind of did too. But like there was no other way for him to be him and do that. And I think the result was a laying bare of what it was.
Hugely effective, but in a very bulwarky way, you know? Like that civil and kind.
Yeah.
Right? You know, in a way it's compassionate. It was great. All right. So how about that triad today? So this was a weird week in which I had half of a news – I had half of this newsletter written the day before. And when I sat down to finish it at like 7 o'clock in the morning, the day it was supposed to go out, I think it was Tuesday, it just kept like – I just couldn't get my arms all the way around it and kept like writing and writing and revising and editing and all this stuff. And I think it went up at like 3,500 words and it was just like too late to send out. I was like, fuck it. Like I missed a day because I couldn't hit my marks, which is a very bad feeling for me. I don't like that.
Yeah. I can't believe you.
I don't like it. It's been happening more often. I don't know if you've clocked this, but like over the last 3 months, it's happened fairly regularly. And I'm trying to like give myself space to do that because I don't want to have bad product. Like it's much more important to me to like protect the integrity of the product than it is to hit the marks. Anyway, I was like, this is a case where I'm also trying to react. I'm trying more to be in dialogue with other things that are going on at the Bulwark because it's now like we're not two products anymore. Like we have this big constellation. And I think one of the ways that I can add value for people is by trying to surface something happening elsewhere in the Bulwark that maybe they didn't see and being in conversation with it for them. And so I was reacting to the George Packer interview that Tim did the day after Thanksgiving, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Which made it maybe get lost in the shuffle, but it's like really worth people's time.
Very much worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I just say to you, not to gas you up, but, you know, we are all together in person. And so there's a little bit of a like, you know, we're also proud of each, you know, we're proud of the work each other are doing. And I think that what I have seen, and I know it's a bit that we do about how I don't read your triads, but like I say, I mostly do. I don't always get to them by the time we talk. But it does seem, and I think this is appropriate for this moment, there's doing the analysis of the news, which is moving very, very fast. And is it like the whole dark JVL is in part that like when you write every day and you're in the news every day and the news is dark every day, it's like – but what I like when you pull back and you do the big questions. Tim always teases you at the end of the TNL because you will often drop one of these at like minute 55. It's like, can liberalism be saved? And we're all like, no.
That's my move.
Yeah. But so when you do these big wrestling pieces, when you do stuff like this, it is my favorite to sit and like wrestle with. So I'm going to tell you all the things I loved about it, and then I'm going to tell you all the things that are wrong with it.
That sounds great. I'm here for this.
Do you want to set it up in terms of the – because it is very long.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I was doing, I wanted to unpack and excavate like a very, very small portion of Packer's conversation with Tim. And George has written this novel in – which is really a Roman Aklef about our moment. And the idea is that you have – the country has really separated into red and blue, and the blue in the cities are – he doesn't call it woke. He calls it together, but they're very woke and like they're well-meaning, but it's also sort of oppressive and bad. And then out in the Outer Burgs, there are the people who I think he calls the yeomen, who are doing like military stuff. Like they want to be militias, basically.
Sure.
And they hate women and all that stuff. Mm. And George, like a lot of good liberals, and I don't mean good. I mean good people like us, people who believe in liberal democracy. George has a lot of like, hey, both sides, we have to understand where this came from. And, you know, like, sure, the people who are committing war crimes are bad, but so are the people on college campuses who, you know, say things I don't like. And he also says, and this is the bigger point of it, that say what you will about Trumpism, but at least MAGA and Trump understood that the old consensus was dead and needed to be replaced. And Democrats and liberals are stuck defending this thing, which is outmoded and which can no longer work. And I think this is an incomplete understanding of our time. Mm-hmm. I think that it is certainly true that many, as he says that people turned to Trumpism because they believed that the old consensus could no longer address their legitimate needs and provide the good life for everyone. I think that may be true for some people. It certainly is true for some people. It is absolutely not true for some very large percentage of other people who embraced MAGA. I think that the both sides stuff is true in the most technical sense, but actually falls prey to what, like, in Catholic world they would call scrupulosity, which is when
– oh, my God. This was my favorite phrase that I've never heard before. Pathological scrupulosity.
Oh, yeah.
I underlined a bunch of things here, but there is a difference between healthy self-interrogation and pathological scrupulosity.
So this is a Catholic thing. So, you know, Catholics have confession.
Yeah.
Right? And like one of the things that you get talked to about is like when you do your examination of conscience before confession, you want to be doing a real examination of your conscience, and that's really important. And really, but it is wrong and unhelpful to turn it into this navel gazing. Oh, and then I did this very tiny little like. It's you're supposed to be able to understand the big picture.
Yeah.
And when you stop doing that and turn everything into a sin, that's called scrupulosity. And it's actually wrong. Like the priest will tell you, no, that's not – got to focus on what real sins are here. What you're doing is not that. It's scrupulosity. And the third part is that I have a real bee in my bonnet about the old – I just call it the neoliberal consensus. But like I think it is probably the most successful – period in American history, and people did not abandon it because it wasn't working. They abandoned it for other reasons, but it absolutely is working and did work, and I do not believe that there is a reason that liberal Democrats, by which I mean all of us on the anti-Trump side, should feel like, oh, well, we got to like really find whatever the new thing is and, you know, for the post – like I reject that. So there, did I set the table adequately?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Although I think that your thesis in here, where you talk about the pathological scrupulosity, and also what was that? That was maybe that was the thing I was the difference between healthy self-interrogation. Your point is, it is good to look and examine your failures and where things might be failing.
Totally.
But that doesn't mean that one ought not fight for liberal democracy and all of the positive attributes that it had, not the least of which – oh, then I would make a similar argument about capitalism, I might
Same.
I might say. You do actually. Yeah. You're there's a lot about this I liked. And you know, sometimes now when you and I both – when we write, I feel like there's just a bit of us in the back of our heads being like,
yeah,
wait,
right.
What would the critique be from Sarah JVO?
We're like King Ghidorah, the Godzilla monster with multiple heads.
Yeah.
Where the heads are actually talking to each other telepathically.
You wanted to – you made sure to say that capitalism mattered and was good. The forces of capitalism could create more general prosperity than other competing systems. True. Capitalism must be regulated in order to blunt its ill effects. True. Yeah. Small government is an impossibility for a hyperpower. Government should be more concerned with efficiency. Oh, no, sorry, efficacy than size. Yes.
And then, I think these are things everybody agreed on by by 2010.
Right.
2008, 25. I mean, you know, like Republicans may have gone around saying, oh, we need a small government, but they didn't govern that way. That's, yeah. You know, their revealed preference is they did not believe that the government should be small. They
That's right.
believed the government should be more effective.
Yeah.
The Democrats had really come around on the free market, mm-hmm. right? Republicans and Democrats would fight a lot about the level of regulation and about how much regulation was needed to optimize outcomes from capitalism. But that's just haggling over price.
Yeah.
Right? On the fundamental things. Is capitalism good? Yes. Does it need to be regulated? Yes. They both agreed. They both agreed on foreign interventionism, right? Like, again, they would haggle about the sides of it, right? You know, like maybe this, we should intervene here, we shouldn't intervene there. But they agreed on all these things. The reason they agreed was because it was good. It was a good system.
Yeah. So part of what I loved about this piece is that I think that this – one of the things that Trump has done is to say America is bad in all of these ways, which is – it is an – it is so – when people are like, oh, Trump was just the logical extension of you know, the rest of Republicans. I'm like, no Republican talked like this ever. There was no Republican. You were much more likely to find Democrats who would tell you America was bad and wrong for a variety of reasons. And Republicans would tell you there's lots of good here. People can succeed in this thing. We have built a system that is, if not perfectly fair, tries to be like more fair. We are trying to be more perfect. And so that to me, that's the America I understood. And it's one of the reasons why sort of the kinds of conservatives that we were, even though you and I were kind of different conservatives, it's not hard now to find ourselves more aligned with kind of center left Democrats because they still believe that the system
All the stuff, yeah.
is roughly good. Now, but the part I wanted to push back on though, or just it's like I kind of wanted to explore it with you is
hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Oh, do you want to hear more about what I liked?
We should do that on the other side.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
On the other side.
We should. Come with us. It's a good discussion.
Come join us over at Bulwark Plus. And on the other side, you also get to hear me be emo.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient unlocked. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.